Talks about more talks. On Friday, the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou McDonald, dismissed efforts to kickstart talks at Stormont as a sham. But the Secretary of State, Cam Bradley, Tunister Simon Coveney, have pledged to come back with new proposals to restart the talks process again. Are you hopeful, or do you think enough is enough? Our political correspondent, Enda McClafferty, is with me this morning. Talks about talks, Enda. Has anything changed?
Nothing as yet, Stephen, has changed. The purpose of last Friday was that Karen Bradley and Simon Coveney had planned to kickstart a talks process within the fortnight. And essentially, they wanted to get the parties around the table on Friday at Stormont House to get a green light for that process to kick in and around the end of February. And what happened is that four parties around the table said, yes, they were up for that. But Sinn Féin said they weren't, because as far as they were concerned, they hold the belief that the British government and the DUP are not serious about negotiation. They had a discussion with Karen Bradley earlier last week and asked a question as to whether or not the DUP were going to change their position. Karen Bradley told them she didn't know. As far as Sinn Féin are concerned, that's a waste of their time to be engaging in a process which they see as simply for the optics, with no sense that the DUP is going to shift from their position. So that's why Mary Lou McDonald made it very clear inside the meeting and outside the meeting afterwards that her party was not going to engage in any such process, and she dismissed it all as a sham.
But it doesn't matter how often they come back, does it, Enda, to all of this about, oh, let's try to re-kick the talks process. They need to sort out this conundrum between the DUP and Sinn Féin. Is there going to be an Irish Language Act or not? Is there going to be a standalone Irish Language Act or not? Or it's not going to go anywhere, is it?
That's right. And it was interesting that the only two parties who issued statements following the discussions on Friday were Sinn Féin and the DUP. First of all, Mary Lou McDonald afterwards, and then Arlene Foster, addressing her spring conference in Ulm at the weekend, accused Sinn Féin of indeed playing games. But you're right, Stephen, unless that central issue is addressed, then there is going to be no moving forward. And as far as Sinn Féin are concerned, they had a deal with the DUP, which they say was reneged upon, and that means that that's their starting point, essentially. If that deal is not honoured in any way, then they say they cannot simply re-engage with the DUP with a sense of going round in circles once more. The DUP, for their part, of course, would say that's what negotiation's all about. You don't indicate beforehand that you're prepared to compromise, that you're prepared to shift before the talks even begin. And they would say that's why they're not accepting any sort of precondition from Sinn Féin around this. But there's a big call to be made now, Stephen, for Karen Bradley and Simon Coveney. Do they push ahead with their plan to call talks, to set up a fresh round of negotiations, in a sense, to put it up to Sinn Féin to say, well, here is the day, here's the event, here's when it starts, will you or will you not be there? And that's something will be interesting to watch over the course of this week, because they have a big call to make whether to do that, in the hope that Sinn Féin do turn up, or perhaps Sinn Féin would say they're not going to play this political game of turning up for talks that are just going to go round in circles and end up nowhere. And of course, all this happening against the backdrop of Brexit, and we know how toxic relations are between Sinn Féin and the DUP and indeed the British government over Brexit. And then, Stephen, let's not forget, of course, we have council elections coming down the track. And as we know in Northern Ireland, expecting parties to compromise during negotiations ahead of an election is something that simply does not happen. So I would imagine that although Karen Bradley and Simon Coveney might think it's worth pursuing this, I think they'll quickly find out, probably from Sinn Féin, that this is a beaten docket.
I see the DUP have sent us through a statement referring to Arlene Foster's speech at her spring conference at the weekend, in which he described what Sinn Féin want as the politics of ransom, and Arlene Foster saying that she has a growing list of demands from all over the country too, from people who want to see progress in schools and roads and hospitals.
And Sinn Féin, for their part, would say privately, Stephen, that there's no appetite among their supporters for a return to Stormont. They're not getting the message that you should sit down with the DUP. They're getting the message that you should stand up to the DUP. So you can see how the narrative is very different on both sides of this particular equation. Arlene Foster, as you say, they're making the point that she feels that the other parties around the table are willing to kickstart a process, are willing to try and get engaged so that they can try and get the institutions restored. But you're not hearing that back from Sinn Féin. They're quite content, I think, to see this Brexit process through, the talk about a border poll, and then, of course, the elections coming up further down the track, the council elections. I think that's their primary focus right now. But the big call has to be made by Simon Coveney and Karen Bradley, whether or not they call these talks, negotiations to get underway, and whether or not Sinn Féin shows up.
Okay, Enda, thank you very much indeed. 0330 80 55 55. Is there any type of momentum within the public consciousness about whether you want a local government back or not? The commentator, Mick Fieldy, with us this morning. Mick, good morning to you.
Hi, Stephen.
Good morning. Is there any desperation, do you think, Mick, from the public to get local ministers back? I don't hear it coming through in the phones.
No, but I think we shouldn't lose perspective on the idea that this is extremely exceptional. Northern Ireland has spent 2 years without a working democracy. Any other part of the Western world, that would be seen as a complete and utter disgrace. What's worse is, as Enda quite rightly says, there's no prospect of any domestic appetite for getting it back. And I think he nailed it somewhere when he said expecting parties to compromise before an election is pie in the sky in this part of the world. Now, what that points at is the fact that the two parties that we expect to do a deal simply cannot do a deal before the election that makes it look like they in any way are going to compromise with each other. And yet, the form of democracy we have chosen is called power sharing. It points to the fact that these two parties have developed a politics that makes it impossible for the two of them to work together on things like health, schools, housing, education and infrastructure, all of which in Northern Ireland, in common with the rest of the United Kingdom and to a lesser extent the rest of the island, have massive deficits that need working on. So one of the reasons why there's no appetite within the populace is they have become deeply sceptical as to whether these two parties will ever work together under any circumstances. If you look at their track record, between welfare reform and the devolution of policing and justice, the Northern Ireland Executive lost nearly 4 years of work together in the politics of protest. So I don't doubt the instincts of the people of Northern Ireland to be sceptical about this, because the track record has been, frankly, appalling.
And it's about local accountability as well, isn't it? It's not just about getting things done. It's also about being able to look a minister straight in the face and say, you're responsible for this being done, and holding them to account. And with no local minister, what can people do to make Northern Ireland better, to push Northern Ireland on, Mick?
Well, it's a difficult one, that, because the resort has not been more accountable government. The resort has always been, oh, this isn't working, we'll go into secret negotiations. Secret negotiations, the objectives of which are never clear, even to people like me who watch the political game very, very closely from week to week, month to month. You know, the present crisis happened because of RHI. Very, very quickly, RHI disappeared as any kind of a demand, and it became the Irish Language Act. But the nature of the Irish Language Act was kept hidden until we saw the so-called draft deal of February last year, in which case it lacked ambition, it lacked power, it lacked anything that really anyone who is an Irish language enthusiast would be looking for out of legislation. So it's all cloak and dagger. Even when they're in so-called government, as I say, they spend most of their time not thinking about the public, and certainly not thinking about how can they be made more accountable to the public. And it's hard to see how we get out of this until we get a political party or a cadre of politicians who want to be accountable, who want the public to say, look, this is what we want to do, how are you going to do it, and when you've done it, how did you do it, and how has it affected me? So I think the challenge for the government is not necessarily to put down, as Enda suggests, a big challenge to the two parties, but to come up with a joint proposal. And against the tide of Brexit, the Irish and British governments have to get very close together on this to produce something that puts a challenge up to the DUP and to Sinn Féin, that if they walk away from it, they will be damaged in the eyes of their own voters.
Here's the first call of the day, Billy in Belfast. Morning, Billy.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Well, is there any pressure, for example, or any questions around the leadership of Mary Lou McDonald or Arlene Foster that they can't get local government back up and going again, Billy? Or do people like you just not want it? Are you happy enough with the status quo?
No, I'm not happy with the status quo at all. I think direct rule should be brought in. But what I was going to say before you tried to lead me on another path was the fact that I voted for the Good Friday Agreement. I voted with my heart instead of with my head. My head said, why the hell should Sinn Féin try and make, when you take in their aspirations, try and make Northern Ireland work? And there's lots of other unions voted against the Good Friday Agreement because they stated that Sinn Féin would only take what it could get out of it and then step away and demand more. And it looks like they were right, and I was totally wrong. Because that's just what they're doing. I know the Good Friday Agreement was mentioned that the Irish Language Act was mentioned in the Good Friday Agreement, but we could argue all day about what that really meant. I mean, the details I still don't know. If there's anybody else out there who really does know all the facts, like, because Irish language has been taught all over the place, there's many Protestants now learning the Irish language.
But Billy, politics is about the art of compromise, isn't it? That's what it's about.
No. Well, the compromise was a Good Friday Agreement. And the Protestant, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm saying Protestant or Unionist population, whatever you want to call us, we compromised nearly too much.
How many people in this country, Billy?
No, you don't go any further.
Billy.
The Good Friday Agreement was hard enough to reach.
Billy, how many people in this country are still thinking like you? Protestants this and Protestants that and unionists this. Do you not think there's a new momentum in Northern Ireland where people are more concentrating not so much on their religion or their background, but more on their prospects for life?
How their kids are going to be educated, and if they're sitting on a waiting list or not. Pressure on people, so you are, Stephen. Of course, we'd all like to love to do that, but where's the proof of it on the Republican side? I'm nothing.
Here you go again.
Catholics. I am. The Republicans are something different from the ordinary Roman Catholic population. The Republicans are out there on their own. Okay, I have nothing against Roman Catholics. I have dinners with them, plenty of them. I've good friends. No problem.
You have dinners
with them.
But
they're not Republicans. That's where the difference is. The Jewish fellows seem to have great difficulty differentiating between a normal, decent Roman Catholic person and somebody who's a Republican out and out.
And Republicans aren't normal and decent anymore in your mind, are they not?
No, they're not. Never were.
Right, okay.
No, they only murdered 2,500 people here, and there's hardly a word out of your BBC about them. It's always about some obscure, somebody was killed by the British Army 30 years ago or something. That comes up regularly.
Billy, you're entitled. You are entitled, and anyone is entitled to want a united Ireland without being slurred. All I'm saying to you is, you know, there are people. Hold on, Billy. Let me make the point, mate.
They're not just wanting a united Ireland, Stephen. They've walked out of government and have caused confusion and hardship for the National Health Service, schools, you name it.
Martin and Ballymurphy wants to speak to you, Billy. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning.
There's Billy. Good morning. Say good morning to him.
I would just like to ask Billy a question. Billy's saying that the new Sinn Féin would come back and demand more.
I suspected it. But
Billy, listen to him, mate. You've got to let other people talk, Billy. Calm down.
Well, you suspected that it would come back and demand more.
Yes.
And you also stated that we have give everything. All we do is... I'm not quoting you here, but yous give everything. But the simple question I'd like to ask you, what is Sinn Féin demanding and what are you giving? What is it that you're giving everybody?
We're sharing power, jobs. There's about 82,000 jobs have went to the nationalist population in the last 20 years.
So you give us that? No, you've got that.
That's one of the things you've got.
And we're not entitled to it, no.
And you're treated as equals in this society.
Yeah, and everybody should be treated as equals. I just want to know, Billy, what you have given over the years. When you say I suspect you mean the unionists.
Tell me what you want out of the Irish Language Act in detail.
What is it?
Because people have been taught the Irish Language Act all over the place, including plenty of Protestant people.
I think this is at the...
And, Billy, what's your point?
The point is you just want more.
What do you mean by what more? It's a right to speak your language. It's a native language of this country.
Tell us what it details.
What are you? You're not even making sense in details. It's a right. It's not a demand. It's a right for people to speak Irish.
And I think what we can hear now. Just stop for one moment, you two. Hold on. I think what
stop
we can.
Stop for one moment. What's that mean? What does that
hold
mean?
Hold on, Martin.
Stop for one moment, you two.
Well, hold on. I think what we can hear in the exchange over the last 5 or 6 minutes is the impasse that there still is in Northern Ireland of some people like Billy who are saying no more, that they're not giving any more, and maybe that's reflected in some of the DUP's rhetoric that there will never be a standalone Irish Language Act.
Well, I want Steve, I want to.
Hold on, Billy. Billy, you need to let me speak, mate.
You should let me speak and don't try and twist things, Stephen.
You've done plenty now. Hold on a minute. You can come back later on. And I think this political impasse is reflected in these calls this morning. So what do we do? And as I said earlier, how many of you are actually more concentrating on the fact that if you try to get on a waiting list in Northern Ireland, you might be sitting quite a long time for your health care.
That's why we're doing
that. If you want education for your kids, there are some teachers saying that they don't have enough money to buy school books. Jim
that's
Wells is with us
room.
From the DUP
Hello,
this
Stephen.
Morning.
Stephen.
Hold on, Martin. Morning to you, Jim.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And here we are, Jim. Is there any political leadership around this? Not to set out a political party's own position, because that's easy to do. Is there any political leadership to find a way through this, to find a new idea, to find a new way of reaching compromise?
Even there are 8 parties at Stormont. 7 of them would be back in next Monday morning. There's only one party causing the so-called impasse. The reality is that Sinn Féin have walked away because they had certain demands. They weren't getting them, so they decided to pull the shutters down. Now, if Sinn Féin walked out of the Dáil, would it shut down? Not a bit of it. If they walked out of Belfast City Council, would it stop functioning? No. But we have a system that allows one party to walk out and the whole thing grinds to a halt. Now, they have concerns. And Arling Foster in...
You do remember the DUP in the past withdrawing ministers from the executive. You do remember that, Jim?
Yes, but we didn't have direct rule. We didn't have an impasse.
Did the same thing. Your party did the same thing.
Government went ahead as normal. Stephen, remember that. Government went ahead. The difference this time round is that the institutions have collapsed. Now, Arling Foster in August 2017 made a very reasonable proposal. She said, yes, Sinn Féin have concerns. Let's come back into Stormont and discuss these. And if we can't reach resolution, then devolution would be suspended again after a certain
having called them crocodiles, Jim.
Well, that was actually in response to demands in the Irish language. I mean, Stephen, if we walked out every time someone in Sinn Féin said something offensive to us, we'd never be there. The defective little statelet and so many other phrases that have been used against us. The reality is, Stephen, in a democracy, you can't allow one party to simply to walk out and bring everything down. Now, they have concerns. They have concerns about an Irish Language Act. They have concerns about gay marriage. They want those discussed. The place to discuss those is in the Assembly, not to walk away, take the ball off the pitch, as it were, and bring everything down. And the reality is that this is not a crisis between the parties. It is one party walking out with its demands. Now, Stephen, we've demands. We could demand that the union flag flies in the City Hall. We could demand that traditional orange parades are allowed down their usual routes. We could, but we're not bringing down the institution simply because we're not getting away on those issues. We have to accept in a democracy that you can't get all of what you want. But you don't react to that by bringing everything down and plunging into 2 years where there's been no political institutions whatsoever.
George in Hollywood. Stay there, Jim. Morning, George.
Hello, Stephen. Why are the BBC and other media outlets failing in their duty to confront the British government and political unionism on this vitally important point? Political unionism must honour previous agreements and attendant agreements, or Stormont is pointless. Let's look at some of the issues. Where's the promised Bill of Rights? The Irish Language Act on the same model as they're available to UK citizens who are Welsh and Scottish? Where's the legacy fund for legacy investigations? Where's the pension fund that were promised Where are the All-Ireland bodies that were never even utilised since 2007? Stephen, there is a whole litany. Even look at reneged promises such as the Lone Cash site. Remember Peter's letter from America? There has to come a point in time we say to ourselves, what is the point of entering agreements with political unionism when they won't honour them? It becomes pointless. It's up to the Irish government and the British government to sit down together and list the issues that have not been implemented from previous agreements and then timetable those for implementation. Otherwise, Stormont is dead.
McPhilty?
Yeah, look, I think there's a misreading of history coming out here, and I don't know where George is getting this from, but the Bill of Rights, both the DUP and Sinn Féin, when they were doing their jobs in the executive, set up several attempts to try and get an agreement on a Bill of Rights. Even on Slugger, there's another thing, the Charter of Rights for the whole of the island. On Slugger, we tried to get a conversation going about that about 10 or 12 years ago. And I know that the chair that was set up to try and get that going wrote to every single political party on the island, north and south, and got two responses, one from the Alliance Party and one from Sinn Féin. Nobody else even bothered to respond. So some of this stuff is being pushed as unionism's fault is actually a failure of governance or a failure of imagination or a failure of politics. I really don't know where the Bill of Rights thing came from, but that one really irks me every time I hear it coming up.
And you heard Mick reflected in our couple of calls this morning, I guess the impasse that there is in Northern Ireland among some people. Now, how reflective is that of the wider population?
Well, I tell you what what you're hearing in the anger from both sides this morning is a reflection of an impasse which is created by the poor politics of both Sinn Féin and the DUP. Now, the DUP changes every time there's a new crisis, and you know, now they're talking warmly about All-Ireland institutions, All-Ireland economies, now they're trying to sell Brexit. Prior to that, they had a very blocking narrative on this. When Arling was the Enterprise Minister, she was poo-pooing the Irish government's insistence on trying to develop an all-Ireland economy, etc. And no less, Sinn Féin's policy doesn't last from one year to the next. Well, their solution to welfare reform is to hand it all back to the Tory government. So what we have, and I want to pick up on something that you said earlier on, that the art of politics is the art of compromise. It isn't. It absolutely isn't, and we need to get that out of our head.
Why is it not?
Because the art of politics is the art of the possible. And we constantly focus on things that we know we can't agree on. The things that we can't agree on are infrastructure, houses, well, maybe not in North Belfast, but pretty much everywhere else. Roads, we've belatedly come, in the last administration, there was some agreement on roads, and there's a massive investment now going in to making the East Coast corridor, north and south, actually work. There's a whole bunch of things that we can do, even the north-south interconnector. All of those things can be worked upon, and they are part of what's possible. We keep getting nodded on things that we know we don't agree on. And
can I interject?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
We really need to get back to the core of this. What is the point of having previous agreements if they're not going to be implemented? Mike's continual shinner bashing isn't going to get us anywhere. We know that previous agreements haven't been implemented. That ought to be the starting point. Logic and reason tells us, why have agreements if people won't implement them? The duty falls on the United Kingdom government and the Irish government to stand back and say, let's review those previous agreements, okay, addendum agreements, and find out what hasn't been implemented.
Listen, we're going to pause there. Now, what about those affected directly by the absences of a functioning Stormont? In January last year, this programme spoke to the historical abuse survivor, Clint Massey, from his hospital bed. Mr. Massey would die a matter of weeks later. He called on elected representatives to get back around the table, implement the recommendations of the HIA inquiry and compensate the victims, something we've been repeatedly told is up to ministers.
I want them people up there to realise that there's
human beings out here who are suffering. They can't understand their attitude. Some of the, what they're doing sometimes is so unbelievably petty that it drives people mad. A will not agree with B. So then we can't go back and sit around the table then. That is wrong. You know, I'm not A and B. I'm Clint Massey. We're on the way to sorting this bit out of, you know, this issue. And then right at the 11th hour, you throw that spanner in the works. Think of all the people out there who, through no fault of their own, found themselves in horrible situations. They're finally getting to a stage in their life when they're putting that behind them. You know, they're holding their heads up. They're telling people who they are. And you're just putting that last hurdle in their way of getting a closure where they can finally sit down and say, right, it was a long struggle, but that's it. But please, please, stop the pettiness over certain things. It's human beings here, ordinary, nice, decent people. Talk. And I believe you can do that. We don't need to be dragged through any more bickering. That doesn't help any of us.
Clint Massey, speaking from his hospital bed, he since died. The victims group representative, John McCourt, is with us this morning. Morning to you, John.
Morning, Stephen.
You yourself a victim, and no agreement in Northern Ireland, nobody to represent the victims, John, at ministerial level.
Yeah, no agreement in Northern Ireland. And listen, I think we have to get to the point where we accept the fact that there isn't going to be an up-and-running executive. A statement from a UK government spokesman last week saying that if there was no return of the Northern Ireland Assembly, then they would consider, after the consultation process is closed on the HIA legislation, they would then consider next steps. I think I've heard that half a dozen times come from the current and the previous Secretary of State. Look, there is no possibility, and anybody that believes there's a possibility before the end of this year of an executive being up and running, being able to deal with all of the issues, including historic institutional abuse, they're living in cuckoo land, because it's not going to happen. And it's about time that Secretary of State took this issue and other issues seriously. You know, just listening to Clint just now reminded me of my own sister, who died just before the inquiry started. She'd registered to take part in the inquiry, and she died of throat cancer 3 months before the executive or before the inquiry took place. So I know what it's like to lose somebody in the waiting game that's being played here. And it's happening, you know, it's happening all the time to families.
There's no public momentum, though.
No, there isn't, which is the reason why Karen Bradley...
You think of the groundswell there is, John. Sorry to interrupt. You think of the groundswell there is on both sides over the Brexit debate, right? And you think of how voices are coming from absolutely everywhere. Passionate people shouting from the rooftops about what they believe in, whether it be Brexit or Remain, deal or no deal, and all of this malarkey. You even think of it was for one day, but you think of the momentum that the young people created last week when they were walking out throughout the UK over environmental change. There's nothing like that about no government in Northern Ireland. There's nothing like that from the general population.
And again, I mean, you know, maybe it's because it's been pushed so far down the agenda because it isn't on top of the list. But what I can agree is that Survivors Northwest and the Rosetta Trust in Belfast, another organisation working with victims and survivors and other groups and individuals out there as well, are lobbying on a daily basis to have this pushed to the top of an agenda and have it dealt with. You know, there's a move recently being made, you know, to start taking this stuff through the courts. Look, taking it through the courts gets personal satisfaction at some level for individual victims. What it does not do is it does not hold government to account. It holds the institutions to account. Government failed here and government are still failing here.
03030 80 55 55. Jim Wells, do you think there'll be a government restored in Northern Ireland anytime soon?
Stephen, I was being realistic with you. I don't think anything's going to move until Brexit is sorted out. And, you and I have spoken many, many times about this issue, and there's still a fog out there as to where we're going with Brexit. And I think that will overhang everything as far as devolution is concerned. Indeed, Stephen, I wonder, would the Assembly, if it had survived 2 years ago, would it have survived the very, very acrimonious debate on Brexit? Because the two sides are in their trenches, and there's very little middle ground left, and it is an extremely contentious issue. So I think we'll have to be realistic that, yes, by all means, start the talks, and the DUP will be at those talks. The DUP will be trying its best to get devolution back on track as quickly as possible. But I think the next month in particular will be traumatic. I think there will be many, many acrimonious debates. And I think the focus, both our own government in Parliament, Westminster, and politicians in Northern Ireland, will be focused on that major issue, the biggest issue perhaps since the end of the Second World War. So I think we should start preparations. We should start to lay the groundwork, as it were, for talks and get down to them. But I think other issues will overhang those for the foreseeable future.
OK, Jim and Mick, thank you very much indeed. And to you, John McCourt, thank you.